Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we have Captain Nate Foster from Company B, 2nd General Support Aviation Battalion, to tell us about the upcoming deployment of his company. And beyond the yellow ribbon, we feature Operation Minnesota Nice. We'll visit the Commissioner's Corner to learn about the county veteran servants officers in Minnesota. And finally, historian Stephen Osman joins us to talk about Minnesota during the Dakota conflict. All this and more on today's Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Check our podcast of today's show and all of our shows online at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's get started. This week, Captain Nate Foster joins us. He is the commander of Bravo Company of the 2nd General Support Aviation Battalion. Captain Foster, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Captain, can you tell me a little bit about your unit, the equipment, and their capabilities?
Our company is a Chinook helicopter company, also known as CH-47. Our primary mission is to move troops, equipment, or other, I guess, necessary pieces of war stuff around based on what the ground commander wants us to do or needs us to do. Our company is comprised of the flight company, which is your crew chiefs and pilots, and then the maintenance support and fuel support, which is the biggest piece of our company, just making sure that our aircraft are able to fly.
And Captain, I understand that your unit will be deploying to Iraq soon?
Yes, in November, end of November here, we are leaving for Fort Hood, Texas to do our train up and then to Iraq following that.
On this training, I understand that some of the preliminary training has been done at Camp Ripley these days?
Yes, we started 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and the first piece of it is our green training, we call it. And that's a lot of the ground-specific training that every soldier has to go through. The Army has actually taken and done a lot of it in the state now to save you more time. It allows you to be home with your families back here instead of being gone for 6 months. You do a few months here and then a couple months at Fort Hood. So do the ground-specific piece here, and then we do a lot of the more mission-focused stuff at Fort Hood.
So in Fort Hood, you'll be down there for, what, 2 months?
Roughly 2 months.
And what type of training takes place there?
Once we get there, it's going to be the mission specific. We're actually going to meet up with our higher headquarters from Georgia and California, and then we're going to start doing exactly what we're going to do over in Iraq. We'll show up. They'll give us the different missions each day, whether it's moving troops, equipment to and from different locations, and then working through the planning pieces and all the personnel pieces of it.
Can you tell me a little about the helicopters that you're taking?
Our helicopters are the big helicopters, like everybody says, they're the big sexy ones. It's a dual rotor aircraft. It's been around for quite a while, back to the Vietnam days. And we can load up to 33 passengers, carry up to 50,000 pounds worth of equipment, and we're one of the fastest ones in the military as well.
We're speaking to Captain Nate Foster, the commander of Bravo Company of the 2nd General Support Aviation Battalion, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, right here on KTOC 100.3 FM. Captain, how many pilots, how many crew do you have on this, on these per helicopter?
Per helicopter, we have two pilots, and then we'll have two crew chiefs and a door gunner in the back. So a total of five crew members. One is a specific flight engineer, they call it, which is a little bit different from the other aircraft in the military. They're kind of the expert in the back. And then we have a crew chief who's a maintainer and then a door gunner.
And Captain, once you get to Iraq, what is your mission? Who will you be supporting in Iraq?
Well, we're in Iraq. We support the ground commander, who's ever in charge of that theater and the ground-specific things. They kind of dictate what we do. They tell us we need to move equipment from one base to another or move troops from one place to another. We support those guys.
So are these frontline type missions, or are they a combination of everything?
Basically everything. The Chinook aircraft can do anything and everything that any other aircraft can do. We can just do it farther, better, and faster than most of the other ones.
Captain, I understand your unit has deployed once before.
Correct. They deployed to Iraq back in 2006 and were there for a year and basically did a lot more of the combat missions at that point in time, along with moving the troops and equipment.
Now, Captain, we were talking about training earlier, and I know that there are some new training programs in place to help you and your family understand the type of support units that are available today that weren't available 40 years ago. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. One of the programs that we do with all our soldiers now is the Family Preparation Academy. It's a one-day event where we actually go up, bring all the families together, and then they have all the service providers like the Yellow Ribbon support groups, the VA, the insurance pieces, the education pieces, different pieces like that. We bring them together all in one place, and then the families go throughout the different stations. They get briefed by the actual providers, and that's a one-time piece. The commander and then the FRG leader, which is Family Readiness Group Leader for our company, we actually go to a three-day training event to get a few more specific details and information on how to help the families.
So your unit's based out of St. Cloud?
That's correct.
And if while you're deployed, if your wife and your new baby need some help, who do they go to?
The first point of contact is our readiness group leader, Sergeant Wolfel, and she's the main point of contact that has all the good information for our Yellow Ribbon group here in Minnesota or any other local community assets that are there.
So that while you're deployed, if anything happens at home, she needs any help, she needs any guidance, she needs anything, she goes right to your, did you call it an FRG?
Correct, the FRG leader, Family Readiness Group.
Family Readiness. So there's some pretty good pre-training and getting everybody ready to, and when you're getting ready to deploy, and you're going to be gone for 12 months, is that it?
That's correct.
How do you feel about those programs being available back here for your family?
It makes you worry a lot less. You're always worried about the people back here. You're not so much worried about yourselves over there. But it's nice knowing that if something does happen back here, there's a big group, a lot of different resources out here that basically will pick it up and do things that you don't even think they can do.
Captain, I'd like to thank you for joining us today, and I hope you have a good, safe trip and deployment and bring everybody home safe and sound. And we hope that your wife and your new baby have a quick year and get you back safe and sound.
Well, thank you much.
That was Captain Nate Foster, the commander of Bravo Company of the 2nd General Support Aviation Battalion. We have links to more information on their upcoming deployment on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Want to know what's on the mind of Minnesota's Adjutant General? Generally Speaking is next on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
To sustain the Minnesota National Guard long into the future and to continue to be a national leader, I'm committed to build upon this solid foundation already in place. Together, we will do this by first and foremost, keep providing a competent, ready force for our state and nation. We must maintain our role as a full-spectrum force, from catastrophic events at home to deployments abroad. The Guard must continue to seamlessly integrate with the broader force. And this will be easier to do based on Minnesota's stellar reputation as a National Guard organization. We will be able to leverage our national Department of Defense and interagency relationships built over years of successful deployments. Here in Minnesota, we must ensure the Guard is prepared to carry out our homeland defense and disaster response missions. With members in nearly every zip code, we are our military's first responders. Secondly, we must continue to work toward an optimal force structure. We'll do this by striving to maintain the significant investment in readiness made over the last 7 years. Guard units must be trained, equipped, and ready for deployments. Next, we must advance our environmentally sustainable infrastructure with regards to our facilities and equipment statewide. Also, it's important that we continue to grow, coordinate, and communicate our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. When Guard units do deploy, we need to continue to take care of their families. Spouses of deployed Guard members wake up without their husbands or wives beside them, far from a community of other families who share in the burden of protecting our nation. Serving these geographically dispersed families is my priority. Finally, the Minnesota National Guard must continue to diversify our military force with regards to race, color, and creed. I'm committed to fostering an environment that truly represents the demographics of the communities in which we serve. We must have leaders that reflect those who we serve and lead. We are at war on two fronts. Our forces and families are under stress, and new and dangerous threats loom on the horizon. Yet I am totally confident we will be able to protect the state and nation, just as the Guard has done for more than 150 years.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Each week we showcase Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. This week, Denise Jorgensen joins us. She is the founder of Operation Minnesota Nice. Denise, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Denise, can you briefly tell us, what is Minnesota Nice?
What Operation Minnesota Nice does is marry up names of service members that we've been told receive little to no mail to volunteers, so that make a commitment to send a minimum of one package a month to that service member while they're deployed in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Denise, you're the founder of Operation Minnesota Nice. Can you tell us how this came to be?
Actually, it was something very simple. A childhood friend of my daughter's, as she was going away to her first year of college, he was going off to war. And in speaking with his mom and getting updates from him about how he was doing, during one of our conversations, she said that the cost of sending boxes were going to be so much, and she wanted to know if maybe friends and family could help out. And I right away said, yes, I would love to. And I started sending my first boxes to him in May of 2004. It became a competition amongst all of us who could send the biggest box to him or the most things. And when my turn came again in July, I went a little bit overboard not to be outdone. And when he received the box, he said to his mom when he called home, "Please thank Denise," because he said there was enough there that I could share with friends of mine or buddies of mine that don't get any mail. This really bothered me. It really bothered me. You go through your mind all the different scenarios for why maybe they aren't getting mail, but ultimately what I came to the conclusion of was it didn't matter why they weren't. And what mattered was they weren't getting mail. So I offered to get the names of these battle buddies of his, and then I would start sending them a monthly package. Soon word got out to my family and to some of my friends, and they wanted names. And it spread like wildfire, just literally word of mouth. And soon I was getting phone calls from strangers asking me if I could get them a name. So I've been reliant on the service members. When they come home, I ask them if they can introduce me to someone in their replacement unit. And they are the ones that feed us the names.
So you're constantly looking for the names of troops that don't get packages in mail.
Right. That's really our target group, those that get little to no mail.
And along the way, Denise, apparently you figured out what type of things that the troops would like to get in these boxes and how to send them so that they could go through.
We have actually. We've kept kind of a running list of any time we've been told that there's a need for something or that they really like something. Of course, over the years, as our establishment, we've established ourselves more in both Iraq and Afghanistan, those needs have changed. So our boxes have changed. But most importantly, our boxes really aren't about necessity, as always. Of course, we include the essentials. But it's more about, having a letter addressed specifically to that service member so that every month when they open that box, they know it was packed just for them. And maybe it has holiday items, or maybe it has a football theme to it. But for those few moments while they're reading that letter that's been written to just them, it fills a gap for them.
Denise, I understand you're still doing this out of your house.
I am. One of my biggest goals in all of this, because I hadn't really set out to do it. I have a full-time job. I have You know, I have a family. But my number one concern was I wanted to keep this as grassroots as when we began it. We started in a spare bedroom in my home, and that's still where things get run out of. As far as donated items, I built a three-car garage, and it comes. We move it out as fast as it comes in. We have no paid staff. We have no paid overhead. Everything we get goes right back in our boxes.
We're speaking to Denise Jorgensen, the founder of Operation Minnesota Nice, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Denise, some of our listeners want to participate and help, what would you tell them?
Well, anybody that wants to participate, whether it's donating an item or sending a one-time box or even a long-term commitment of adopting a service member for the deployment, will accommodate anyone. You can simply go to our website, which is OperationMinnesotaNice.com, or you can give us a call, and the number is 763-464-1696.
Denise, how do you find time to answer that phone for all the people who are going to be calling?
It is a second full-time job. I will be very honest with you. That's all I have time for are my two full-time jobs.
Now,
but you couldn't find nothing has brought more joy to my life than probably my children than doing this.
Now, I was approached this week by a group that wants to get together and do this as a group. What would you say to them?
We have many we call them private packing groups. It might be a knitters club or a quilting club or some motorcycle groups. Get in touch with us. We'll work with whatever your perimeters are. If you want to send a box, we want to make sure that we help you get that box over there.
Denise, I saw on your website that there was a list of suggested items to send, and it's quite a list. How do you gather up all of those things? Where do they come from?
Well, some are donated items. Some of them are items that the volunteers purchase. One of the things that, you know, there's only a few things that separate us from some of the great organizations that are out there. Number one is that we're still very grassroots. Number two is the thought that we want to make sure that everybody can be involved in this no matter what income bracket you come from. And that's where the premise, the packing group started that way. We have roughly about 62 packing groups right now across the state. What happens in a packing group is that people in that community that have adopted a service member gather. Each person buys one item, but 10 of that item, and it's whatever they can afford. There's no minimum amount that is required to be spent. Maybe I can only afford chapstick, and the person next to me can afford beef jerky. But it affords all of us to come together, share our items, and be part of that community that just wants to support a service member. When we do have Minnesota has been, the businesses have been wonderful as far as donating items and doing drives for us. Any of those items that are collected are literally distributed throughout the entire state to our packing locations.
Denise, when did the holidays start for Operation Minnesota Nights? It's almost Thanksgiving. People are going to know, how can I help?
We're already done with Thanksgiving. If you like the holidays, the holidays get stretched out for us. We actually start our Christmas boxes in October. We start planning them. Thanksgiving boxes are out by Halloween. You know, we have to stay ahead in order to ensure that those, even their most remote locations, will get them in time for their holidays. We do still have names available if anybody would like to send a one-time Christmas box. We do have a system put in place for that. Just get in touch with us. We'll get you the information that you need. And those boxes need to be sent out by December 10th.
Denise, my briefing papers say that you have sent boxes to over 10,000 service members.
Yes, we're approaching our 11,000 service member, and that's almost 11,000 getting monthly boxes.
And more than 500,000 pounds of goods to the soldiers.
Yes.
Denise, yes. I don't know how you find the time and energy to do this, but you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Please don't quit, because we need your help and the troops need your help. And I'd like to thank you for joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That was Denise Jorgensen, the founder of Operation Minnesota Nice. We've linked to more information on Operation Minnesota Nice on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. For more information on bringing service members all the way home, visit BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. a group of church ladies saw a young military spouse struggling to keep her toddler in line during service one autumn day. Afterwards at coffee, Betty said to her friends, "We should really do something for her. Her husband is deployed." The idea was born. In days, the group of parishioners planned to make holiday baskets for each member of their parish whose spouse was deployed. They brought in homemade jellies and preserves, holiday decorations, and flowers. Just before Thanksgiving, the women delivered all three baskets to wide-eyed military spouses from their church. What Betty and her friends didn't realize is the gift they had given to the deployed service members. That day, over long-distance lines, three young wives gushed to their husbands about what a caring community they lived in. That evening, the phone call wasn't about all the things going wrong at home that the service member couldn't help fix. It was a joyful conversation about the place they choose for their home. Thank you, Betty and friends, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. It also connects organizations, agencies, and companies to provide resources and support to service members and their families, and is united to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can join or start a Yellow Ribbon network in your community, and like Betty, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. It's time for a short break, and when we return, we will visit the Commissioner's Corner and hear from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs next on KTalk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This week, we hear from Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is proud to be a strong partner with the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers. CVSOs, as we call them, are county employees who help veterans and their families obtain benefits and services related to their military service. In Minnesota, all 87 counties are represented by a CVSO. We have 114 statewide. In Minnesota, it's a requirement that all CVSOs are also veterans. This is important because it often helps them relate to the veterans they're assisting. Sharing the experience of service can help establish trust and a credibility between the CVSO and veteran. CVSOs are also involved in quality training, claims development, community outreach, updates on regulations, and advocacy on veterans' issues. CVSOs are almost always the first stop or first point of contact for veterans. Between 75 and 90% of the annual claims routed to the Federal Veterans Administration originate in a county veterans office. In our department, one of our newest employees recently went through the claims process with his CVSO. His experience was very positive. Navigating the claims process is challenging, and he pointed out that veterans often don't even know the right questions to ask, along the lines of the saying, "You don't know what you don't know." His CVSO helped him access benefits he wasn't even aware of. The idea is that a CVSO acts as a veteran's personal advocate, while at the same time navigate the sometimes confusing paperwork and federal claims process. CVSOs do important work. They sit across from men and women every day who have worn a uniform and served their country. They exist to serve veterans. Minnesota really is lucky to have a strong and passionate group of CVSOs. As a state, we have a history of leading the way when it comes to innovation and forward thinking. So it's really no surprise that Minnesota was the meeting ground in 1989 when eight states came together and formed the National CVSO Association. I think it's also important to note there is no statute of limitation on filing a claim. The anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor is coming on December 7th. One of our CVSOs in Minnesota recently helped a Pearl Harbor veteran apply for benefits related to his service more than 60 years ago. He felt he didn't deserve the benefits because his injuries weren't serious enough. What the County Veteran Service Officer helped him understand is that these benefits and services he has more than earned. If you are a veteran or the family member of a veteran, please reach out to your county veteran service officer today.
Thank you, Commissioner Worlds. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs at minnesotaveteran.org or 1-888-LINK-VET. Each week, we explore the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs' commitment to serving Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors by securing benefits provided by federal and state laws. This week, Todd Kabinski joins us. He is the Scott County Director of Veterans Services and Vice President of the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers. Mr. Kabinski, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us, what is the role of a County Veterans Service Officer?
Sure. The County Veterans Service Officer is your entry point into all things veteran. Our core mission is to help establish service-connected claims for injuries or illnesses that were sustained while you're on active duty. But we do other things, too. We help get you enrolled into the VA healthcare system. We also help you with referrals for job placement through the Minnesota workforce or through other programs that are available. We interface with nonprofit organizations to provide the most comprehensive solutions to our veterans' needs.
Now, Todd, there's a county veteran service officer in every county, as the commissioner told us, and 114 of you in the state. Would you recommend that veterans get to know their county veteran service officer?
Absolutely. The system that we have here in Minnesota with the county veteran service officers, the national service organizations, and the VA regional office itself, there's a relationship there where it works best when you come in and see us. We are in the community. We're local enough that you can come in and see us. We are experienced and trained in developing claims, getting all the necessary paperwork and evidence together for that claim before it even gets to the regional office, which makes the claims go through a lot smoother.
We're speaking to Todd Kabinski, the Scott County Director of Veterans Services and Vice President of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, here on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Todd, what type of services and programs do you offer?
Well, like I said, our core mission is to help veterans apply for compensation for their service-connected injuries and illnesses. That's the base that we do. There are also programs such as a non-service-connected disability pension, which is kind of a safety net benefit for veterans who serve during a wartime period. We also assist widows of veterans if they have any survivor benefits that they're eligible for. We deal with burial benefits, health care benefits. We do assessments for any state benefits that may be needed for temporary help to help with rent or mortgage, utility bills, that type of thing, dental and optical benefits. And we also work with our other units within the county itself. We work with our human services units. We work with the CAP agencies for things like food shelf assistance, help with energy assistance, getting food stamps. We really try to interface with everything and try to find the exact program that fits the veteran's need.
Todd, in today's economy, as we know, the unemployment is higher than we'd like, and the unemployment among the returning troops is quite a bit higher than that. Do you get involved in personal finances and employment issues for veterans as well?
Well, we do, to the extent that we work very closely with the veterans employment reps with the state of Minnesota. In our area, we have one that is in Bloomington and another one in Burnsville, and they will visit the Shakopee Workforce Center a couple days a week. And we work hand-in-hand getting them involved in getting set up a Minnesota Works job bank, making sure that their resumes are together, and even the workforce personnel, not just the veterans employment rep, but the programs through the workforce centers themselves, help them get their resumes together, give them job interview skills, that type of thing. So we do a lot of that.
Todd, do you visit some of the veteran service organizations occasionally? If you go to a VFW or a Legion, some of the veterans will have issues and they might be crabbing about it at a meeting. Do you get involved in that to help solve issues that multiple veterans might see?
Yeah, we really couldn't do our job if it wasn't for the local posts, the American Legions, VFWs. We're in constant contact with the commanders and the service officers in those posts. I do visits there, and if there's issues that are brought up on a more global scale in the county, they bring it to my attention. They're really my eyes and ears in the county.
Todd, they tell me that as a county veteran service officer, you're supposed to understand all the rules and understand the meaning and application of the laws that have been passed by Congress that affect veterans and their dependents. How do you keep up on all that?
Well, it takes a lot of reading and really knowing where to find the information. The Code of Federal Regulations, which governs not only the adjudication of claims, but also the rating decisions, is about 4.5 inches thick. There's no way to memorize all that, but we know where to look for it. And we have tools such as hard copy manuals, online references, so we're able to get into that. It takes about 2 to 3 years for a county veteran service officer to really be comfortable with the process of what they're doing in their office on a day-to-day basis.
Todd, we've got about a minute left. I understand you're the vice president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers.
Yep.
How does that help the individual county service veteran officers?
Well, the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers is an organization dedicated to making sure that we have the most complete information and the best training so that we are all on the same page when it comes to serving the veterans of the state of Minnesota. We will also add support to any type of legislation that we see that will benefit veterans, and we're able to speak as one voice as an advocate to the state of Minnesota on behalf of our veterans.
Todd, you and the other 113 county veteran service officers are doing a great job out there to take care of our veterans. If they want to get a hold of you, how do they go about doing that?
Best way to get a hold of us is that we're in the blue pages of the phone book, if you still use phone books. Otherwise, our directory is located at www.macvso.org. Or on the MDVA website, there is also a link for directories, and our CVSO directory is listed there.
Mr. Kubinski, thanks for joining us on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. That was Todd Kubinski, the Scott County Director of Veterans Services and Vice President of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. We have links to more information on county veteran service officers on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. When we return, we'll look back to Minnesota during the Dakota conflict. That's next on KTOC 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining us now is Stephen Osman. For over 30 years, he managed the historic Fort Snelling and recently retired as a senior historian with the Minnesota Historical Society. Mr. Osman, welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you.
We're talking today about the Dakota conflict of 1862 and beyond. And can you tell us who were Minnesota's first citizens, and what was their status in 1862?
Well, there were around 6,000 to 8,000 Eastern Dakota in four tribes or bands in the southern half of Minnesota. To the north was the larger Ojibwa tribe on the northern half of the state. By 1862, most of the Dakota were on a reservation on the south side of the Minnesota River from just above New Ulm out to the state's western border. Some of the Dakota were adopting white farming methods. They were giving up hunting and roaming over the plains. Some were converting to Christianity. A good number of others simply refused to give up the old ways, but everything was about to change for them.
And Stephen, and in 1862, how many soldiers did Minnesota have in the militia?
Well, Minnesota had few soldiers in the militia, per se. They had a lot of recruits who were just in the process of enlisting for the Union Army. Many of the recruits at Fort Snelling had been sent home to take in the fall harvest and were then expected to come back in the fall, put on their uniforms, and head downriver to fight Confederates. So they were scattered all over the state.
And what drove the Dakota people to war?
There were a number of reasons. The Dakota were very frustrated over the slow pace of their annuity payments, that annual money that they got for selling their land to the state of the federal government for settlement. And there were rumors that there would be no payment coming at all because the rumors were the government was broke because of the war. Close to the edge of the reservation, whites were encroaching onto the reservation, cutting wood, hunting. Many Dakota has had a sense of hopelessness, especially the traditionalists who really saw no future for their lifestyle. And finally, there was a perception of Union reverses that the North was frankly about to lose the Civil War, and if that happened, this was the perfect time for the Dakota to reclaim their land in Minnesota.
We're speaking with Stephen Osman on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on KTOC 100.3 FM. Stephen, didn't the conflict lead to a couple of near disasters for Minnesota soldiers?
Certainly so. There were two very large disasters. The first, on literally the first day of the conflict, at the Redwood Ferry just east of Redwood Falls, and then a couple of weeks later at nearby Birch Coulee. A group of Minnesota soldiers was ambushed in the first case and surrounded at dawn in the second case, and in each of those battles, about 25 Minnesota soldiers were killed. Now, that doesn't sound like many until you work out the population comparisons. Compared to today's population, this would be the equivalent of 800 Minnesota National Guardsmen being killed in one day. So it was a big deal to the citizens of Minnesota in 1862.
And Stephen, what happened at the Battle of Wood Lake near Granite Falls?
The Wood Lake battle was really the decisive defeat for the Dakota forces led by Little Crow. And Minnesota's secret weapon were the veterans of the 3rd Minnesota Regiment who were back home after being captured in Tennessee. The Dakota sprang an ambush early. The soldiers responded with skilled fighting. Most of the warriors at the end of the day fled to Dakota territory. And over 200 captives were released a few days later.
Did the Dakota conflict end in 1862, and what happened to the Dakota
it did
people?
Not. Many Dakota fled west and to the north. About 2,000 were gathered up as winter approached. They were moved to a stockade below Fort Snelling. About 130 of them died, mostly of measles and pneumonia. That winter, the treaties were abrogated. The Dakota were exiled to the Missouri River in 1863. Meanwhile, about 250 of the Dakota men were convicted and sentenced to prison terms, and 38 more were actually hung in Mankato the day after Christmas, 1862. But many Dakota never left the state. They continued to live on small reserves at Mendota and Faribault. Other Dakota actually served in the Union Army during the rest of the Civil War period. And in 1863 and 1864, there were major military expeditions into Dakota territory, culminating in the huge Battle of Killdeer Mountain. And actually, a guy named Sitting Bull was present as a warrior at that particular battle, and that conflict continued on until 1876, the Little Bighorn.
Stephen Osman, thanks for joining us today. Your insights into Minnesota's military history are very fascinating, as usual.
Thanks, Tom. Good day.
We've linked to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Now let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio is the Director of Public Affairs for the Minnesota National Guard, Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Olson.
And good morning, Tom. You know, we're looking for folks to connect with us with MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let us know any questions you have. You can certainly go to our website and click on Contact Us, or go to our Facebook page, become a fan of Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We're looking forward to soliciting your questions. And, you know, I do get a lot of questions at the Minnesota National Guard website, MinnesotaNationalGuard.org. And a very, very common question is, you know, hey, I've recently left the military, or a family member has left the military, and we're looking for our proof of service records. And the military calls that a DD-214. DD as in Department of Defense. It may sound like mumbo jumbo if you're not in the military, but for those of us that have served or are serving, it's a very important document. And if you don't have it, it really limits your access to a number of different benefits. So what do I do when I get those questions? I send them to my friends at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And I've asked my colleague, Sarah Graves, to join us and explain how folks can request military service records, specifically their DD-214. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. There's a few simple ways that veterans or their family members can get a hold of that DD-214. One of the best ways is to get in touch with your CVSO. A lot of county veteran service officers can help you get that document very easily. They may even have a record in their office. A second resource that is new with the National Archives, they house all of United States military personnel records at what's called eVetRex. And you can visit them at www.archives.gov/veterans, and you can request your paperwork from them. And then if you can't remember any of that, one of the simplest ways is to call the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs at 1-888-LINK-VET or visit us online at minnesotaveteran.org.
So, Sarah, after I contact my veteran service officer and they help me facilitate this, is there any cost to obtaining a DD-214?
No, there's not a cost related to it. It's your paperwork, and you have access to it, so it's a pretty easy process.
And how long does this normally take? I mean, once I submit my request, about how long does that take for the folks at the National Personnel Records Center to take care of that?
It should be about 10 days, and you should expect to get your records after that time.
All right. So if you have questions about how to obtain your DD-214, your first stop is your county veteran service officer.
Thank you, Colonel Olson, and thank you, Sarah Graves. And if our listeners has a question, we'd love to hear from you. Post your question on our Facebook wall or go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Click on Contact Us. We'll look forward to answering your questions soon. We're just about out of time for today. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, a weekly look at the issues surrounding Minnesota military service members, families, and employers. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Captain Nate Foster from Bravo Company, the 2nd General Support Aviation Battalion, Denise Jorgensen from Operation Minnesota Nice, Todd Kubinski from the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and our historian, Stephen Osman. And also, we'd like to thank the Deputy Commissioner, Reggie Worlds, for joining us, and not to forget, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Thank you for joining us today for the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Please tune us in next week when we have a visit with the former Adjutant General, Lieutenant General Larry Shalito. We discover the origins of the Minnesota Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and we discuss veterans' benefits for Vietnam veterans concerned with Agent Orange. If you have questions for our mailbag, and if you want to check out the podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Please join us every Sunday morning at 7 right here on KTalk 100.3 FM. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.